You're listening to Christian Talk 660 and 92.9 FM. This is Christian Worldview with Tony and Hannah. To be a part of our program, dial toll-free 1-888-660-WLFJ. That's 1-888-660-9535. Then you can talk to our hosts, Hannah Miller and Dr. Tony Bean.
Welcome in, everybody. It's Backpatting Day. Thanks for joining us on Christian Worldview with Tony and Hannah. This is Tony Beam. I am the Director of Church and Community Engagement for the Tim Brazier Campus of North Greenville University, where Christ makes the difference. All right, let's correct the record coming out of the gate here. Big mea culpa. You know, and this is really bad for me, you know. There's one thing about it. Everything I do is big. And when I make mistakes, I make big ones. I don't just do some little tiny insignificant thing. I mean, I totally botch the anniversary of the assassination attempt of Ronald Reagan. For some reason, well, I know why I did it, because I was told that Sebastian Gorka was talking about it and played a bunch of interviews. And Reagan, the assassination attempt on Ronald Reagan took place on March the 30th. Just for everybody's edification. So why in the world? And I should have known that. I mean, as many biographies of Reagan as I've read, as many times, I mean, I've been to the Reagan Museum. I've looked at a lot of his original papers. I mean, but I just got caught up in a moment yesterday and went with the flow of some information that I don't know what Gorka was doing, but it's not until March 30th. I looked it up last night, just to double check. So I meant to call you yesterday and get you to stop. I didn't even want you to put the podcast up so that people could go hear that more than once. But it was March 30th, 1981. That's when that happened. So I just want to clear the record. So if you're listening to podcast today, you'll know that at least I've made the attempt here. All right, the president, did he already sign the bill? He didn't sign it.
I didn't think so.
No, I don't think so. It just passed last night. This is what it sounded like, by the way. Here's what it sounded like when it passed the Senate. This is cut number 6. And then we'll play what it sounded like when it passed the House. You don't have the disc.
No, sir.
Well, forget it then. We can't do anything. No, stop doing that. We don't have time for me to get it ejected and get it handed to you and do all that. I just didn't realize I hadn't even ejected the disc. I knew I should have started the weekend yesterday. I was thinking about it. I was thinking about just blowing off the show today and going and doing nothing today. And it would have been better than what I'm doing now. Suffice it to say that the bill passed in the House. It passed in the Senate. President Trump says he's going to sign it. McConnell went to the floor last night of the Senate and announced that President Trump was going to sign it. So he's going to sign it. It is a terrible bill. Absolutely horrendous. And the president says he's going to sign it, and then he's going to declare a national emergency and try to get the money to go build the wall. That'll get tied up in the courts immediately. Down in El Paso, they're sitting on a spring waiting for the president to sign the declaration, the national emergency, and then they're going to file a lawsuit saying there is no national emergency, and it'll be, who knows how long that'll take. Maybe it'll be expedited at the Supreme Court. Who knows? Nancy Pelosi came out yesterday and pretty much said, okay, if you're going to do a national emergency, Democrat presidents can do that too, and when there's a Democrat president, we'll get a national emergency for gun control. I mean, she basically threatened the president by saying, you do this, and then when we get the White House, we'll turn it around on you, and we'll do it for guns. And, you know, that's a big possibility. That's why a lot of conservatives do not want the president to go around the Congress and declare a national emergency because of the precedent that it will set, let alone the question of whether or not it's actually constitutional. But let's talk here for a second about this bill, because to me, again, it's a bad idea to do the immigration bill, and it's a bad idea to do a national emergency And we're about to have both. One of the reasons that I think that the president shouldn't sign this is because the bill actually allows Texas counties to stop the border wall. I mean, I wonder how many of you know this. You probably don't, because the bill's over 1,200 pages. There's no way that anybody's read it. It was written by lobbyists and congressional aides. I doubt that the representatives, the people that were on the committee that were talking about the compromise and all that, have even, I doubt they wrote any of it. But a key provision in the spending bill is to give specific Texas border counties the opportunity to derail efforts to build barriers, fencing, or walls by simply opposing the construction of the border security measures. Now, these specified counties, the problem is that they have a long and recent history of top officials taking bribes from the Mexican Gulf cartel. So you're going to give a bunch of county officials who have a history of taking bribes from the cartels the ability to decide whether they're going to have a wall in their sector. I mean, that's just insane. And besides that, the area where this immigration bill allows a wall, a barrier to be built, even if you say, well, maybe the bribes won't be in place, the local officials have the power over it, and the counties where this wall is going to be built lean Democrat. I mean, in fact, they're heavily Democrat. So it's not likely that anything is going to get built. Section 232A says that prior to the use of any funds made available by this act for the construction of physical barriers, the Department of Homeland Security shall confer and seek to reach mutual agreement regarding the design and alignment of physical barriers within that city. Now, who are they supposed to consult with? Well, it's going to be elected officials that are liberal, because this is in the Rio Grande Valley, where there's a whole lot of illegal crossings, and we need fencing there. We need a barrier there. But these are the most liberal counties on the border, pretty much thanks to demographics, pretty much thanks to the fact that we've got an open border. And because of that, it's very unlikely that even the money, the $1.3 million, and by the way, the president started with $25 billion. The president started with $25 billion. He asked for $5.7 billion. The original bill had $3.7 or $3.something billion. Now we're down to $1.3, close to $1.4 billion to actually build a wall. It's only 55 miles, and it's going to be for the Rio Grande Valley. It has to be approved by liberal, leftist, local politicians, many of whom have been on the take from the Mexican cartels. And this is supposed to be the big bill that's going to build the border wall. The president's going to sign it because they don't want to shut down the government. If they shut down the government, the partial government shutdown, the president will get blamed. Nancy Pelosi's poll numbers will go up. Right now, the president's polling numbers have been going up. Gallup tracking poll, not Rasmussen, Gallup, has the president up about 7 points in his popularity. So it right now the president is doing better, but a majority of Americans don't want him to declare a national emergency. So and whether that matters or not, I mean, I get it. The base is going to lose their mind if he doesn't do something to try to build the wall. But it's a bad precedent. It opens the door for Democrats to do the same thing. And all you have to do is go back and look. Do you think Harry Reid regrets doing away with the veto power over judicial appointments? You think he regrets that? Considering the fact that after he did that, we were able to get in the United States Senate 2 conservative judges on the United States Supreme Court. And then we've been able to get all these judges appointed. I'm telling you, precedent means something, because eventually, it may not be in 2020. I hope not. But eventually, there's going to be a Democrat in the White House. And when there is, if this national emergency stands, then, I mean, just imagine what a progressive would do with that. What kind of, I mean, can you imagine the confiscation of rifles that are labeled assault rifles? Can you imagine a presidential edict that says that, you know, gas is going to be $6 a gallon and all the money's going to go to combat global warming? Or a presidential edict that says that everybody's got to drive an electric or hybrid at the least car? I mean, there's all kinds of things. We've seen the Green New Deal. A lot of that Green New Deal, a liberal president could just put in place and go around Congress and say, this is the way it's got to be. I mean, I don't think we want that. And I know Senator Graham now is all in. He's asking for Republicans to support the president. And Mitch McConnell has already said from the floor last night that he would support the president declaring a national emergency. So, okay, if that's what we're going to do, and, you know, if it's ruled constitutional, just put a marker in your brain that says when a Democrat president steps into the White House and tries to do a gun grab through a national emergency because of the next shooting, then just realize how executive power can be used both ways, in ways that we like, in ways that we really don't like. Mike, thanks for calling.
Hey, couldn't they keep the government open for a couple more weeks so he could soak this bill in? And you talk about 1,100 pages. He didn't really have time to thoroughly go over it. So keep the government open for two more weeks.
You can't do it. It doesn't work that way, Mike. It just doesn't work that way. You have to have it. You've got to have legislation. The Constitution gives the power of the purse to the House. They have to pass a bill to fund the government. It's either close the government for the next 2 weeks and have that discussion, or keep or open the government by signing the bill. Those are the options.
Well, you think you'd have time to make some readjustments if needed to make some readjustments.
Yeah, but that's not the way the government's working right now. They're dropping 1,200, 1,500, 1,600 page bills that nobody's read, and then everybody's lining up to vote for it. I mean, the vote in the House, in the Senate last night was like 86 to 14 or 84 to 16, something like that. The vote in the House, they got over 300 votes in the House.
My question to you would be, would you sign this bill? Would you declare a national emergency? And if I understand you correctly, you're saying even if he declare a national emergency, they're going to fight him tooth and nail. And
of course.
And probably won't even go through.
Well, that's of course. Look, the only, we don't know the answer to that question as to whether or not this will be deemed constitutional. They have to fight it out. And the answer to your question is, no, I wouldn't sign this bill, and no, I wouldn't declare a national emergency. If it was me, I'd send everybody back to the drawing board, and I would go on a national tour, and I would go on television, and I would use the bully pulpit of the presidency to convince the American people that what needs to happen is that we need a border barrier for the security of the United States, and that the Democrats are radical and out of control. And I would pound away, you know, 18 hours a day, and I would send out everybody that supports me to do the same, and I'd try to get into a national debate and win that debate. That's the way a constitutional republic is supposed to work. But that's not what we're doing.
And as far as Nancy Pelosi goes, what she's saying is unconstitutional. She just can't take people's guns away from them. That's unconstitutional.
It's not unconstitutional if you declare a national emergency and give the president the power that it's unconstitutional for the president to go down and build a border wall, Mike, without the money. That's why he's declaring a national emergency, because it is the power that's been granted to the president to take something that normally would be unconstitutional and make it constitutional because we have a national emergency. We got to take a break and we'll come back. Thanks for listening. 1-888-660-WLFJ, 888-660-9535. Stay with us.
And here's your host, Dr. Tony Bean.
I tell you what, let me just go back to Daniel Horowitz here, because he's done yeoman's work on this, and he's poured through the 1,169-page bill here to find some of the provisions that are just maddening. And let's start, because Horowitz starts with this, and I think this is a good place to start, is with the whole process. This is an immoral process that's being forced on the American people to dump a bill of this size and then vote for it. You can't read 1,169 pages. There's no way that the legislators who are voting for this bill know for sure what's in it. It's a physical impossibility. And of course, the American people don't know. I mean, you realize we the people are supposed to be making the decisions, which means we the people should be able to be fully informed about what's in the bill so that we can respond to lawmakers and make our desires known so that the lawmakers can actually be representatives. But that's not what's going on here. So there's that problem. And then here are the five most insane things, according to Daniel Horowitz today, writing at Christian Conservative Review. Less of a wall than the Democrats agreed to. We talked about that briefly. We went from $25 billion to $5.6 billion to $1.6 billion down to $1.3, almost $1.4 billion. And there's no ability to adapt. This is borders only. This is a barrier only, a bollard wall. The steel slats just in the Rio Grande sector and only the bollard fencing. There's no ability to change or adapt. Section 231 of this bill prohibits construction even within the Rio Grande Valley in five locations that are either federal or state lands. You know, if you're going to build a wall in Texas, unlike in other states, the feds need to navigate the issues between public and private lands. So the first place you'd construct fencing is on public lands, which are now prohibited. You see, the Democrats know this, so they put this in the bill to make sure that public land couldn't be used, which is where you would normally begin. So now you've got to either go buy the land, which is going to take some of the money, or you've got to confiscate it, or you've got to convince people to let you build on their property or pay rent or something to be able to put up the wall. The second thing is the liberal local officials that we talked about. Section 232 says, prior to the use of any funds made available by this act, the construction of physical barriers, Department of Homeland Security shall confer and seek to reach mutual agreement regarding the design and alignment of physical barriers within the city. So we're talking about local elected officials in mostly liberal counties that are not going to allow this to happen because they're going to be part of the resistance. And the ones who might be inclined to let it happen are likely being paid by the Mexican cartels to vote against or to stand against it. The bill stipulates that such consultation shall continue until September 30th, 2019, or until agreement is reached, and may be extended beyond that date by agreement of the parties, with no funds made available in this act shall be used for such construction while consultations are continuing. So these officials, they don't even have to say no. They can just say, well, we're going to consult. And they've got all the way up through the month of September to consult. And if they decide that they need to consult some more, the bill allows a provision for the consultation to continue. And no structures can be built while the talks are ongoing. This is insane, folks. This is pure insanity. This is a compromise. They've put every limiting possibility they could come up with in this bill. There is going to be no wall built under this bill. That $1.4 billion is going to be tied up. Another thing the bill has is a blatant amnesty section. Section 224A prohibits the deportation of anyone who is sponsoring an unaccompanied minor illegal alien or who says they might sponsor an unaccompanied minor illegal alien or lives in a household with an unaccompanied illegal minor or a household that potentially might sponsor an unaccompanied illegal minor. So all you got to do is that's everybody, right? I mean, that's a limitation without limit, so to speak. So that's saying if the bill will not apply. That is, we won't deport you if you're sponsoring a minor, if you might sponsor a minor, or if you live in a house that might, in the future, consider the sponsorship of a minor. So this is, and here's what we know for certain. Central American teenagers are only treated as refugees if they are A, a victim of severe form of trafficking, or B, have no relatives in the country. Yet almost all of them are self-trafficked by the very illegal relatives who are present in the country. So rather than clamping down on this, the bill gives amnesty to the very people that the cartels are paying to get here so that they can push drugs. And these people can't be deported under this bill. I mean, according to Jessica Vaughn of the Center for Immigration Studies, this bill should be called the MS-13 Household Protection Act of 2019. So, you know, and of course you already know, we've talked about on the program before, that we're going to have less beds. This is actually funding interior detention centers. In other words, they're going to take the money that we do have and they're going to use it to have detention centers throughout the country and to beef up those areas so that you get people away from the border. And once you do that, they go into these centers, they're released into the interior of the country, and they disappear. It's just another way to get here illegally. All of this is in the bill. Plus, one more thing. This bill actually doubles the number of low-skilled workers that would be allowed legally into the country. This is page 1,161. It doubles the number of H-2B non-agricultural unskilled seasonal workers who will continue to pour into the country. I mean, this is all that could be found in the bill in 24 hours. So it's immoral. It's immoral to do it this way. It's immoral. It is an immoral practice that's going to take place here. This is smoke and mirrors, where the president can say that I've got my $1.4 billion. We're going to build 55 miles, and knowing that it's going to be tied up with local, county, and city officials at least until September and beyond, if they so desire. This will drag on. And then the president's declaration of a national emergency, we have no expectation or very little expectation that will be ruled constitutional. It'll immediately be challenged. You know, I'm sorry, and I know I get in trouble when I criticize the president. But I'm just telling you, this is not a negotiation. The president, to me, is not a good... He's supposed to be this master negotiator, and yet he gets his hat handed to him. If you remember, when was it? Last year, that he went around the Republican leadership in the Congress, cut a deal with the Democrats, gave them everything they wanted in spending. And now the Democrats, now that they own the House, have repaid the president by refusing to even sit down with him. And then they hand him this smoke and mirrors bill and say, we're going to give you a little bit of border wall funding so that you can go declare a victory to your base. But when you read the bill, you find out that there's no wall going to be built, not even the bollard wall. So that's where we are. 1-888-660-WLFJ, 888-660-9535. We'll be back in 3 minutes. I'd love to hear your opinion. You're welcome to call in. Talk radio works better when you talk on this Backpatting Friday edition of Christian Worldview with Tony and Hannah.
And here's your host, Dr. Tony Bean.
All right, welcome back. Thanks for sticking with us here this morning. All right, here's Nancy Pelosi with her talking about a national emergency. This is cut number 4. And here's where she kind of sets up the next statement that you're going to hear in cut number 5. It takes both of these to understand what she's saying. Here we go.
You want to talk about a national emergency? Let's talk about today, the 1-year anniversary of another manifestation of the epidemic of gun violence in America. That's a national emergency. Why don't you declare that emergency, Mr. President? I wish you would.
Okay. Then she says this.
Democratic president can declare emergencies as well. So the precedent that the president is setting here is something that should be met with great unease and dismay by the Republicans. And of course, we will respond accordingly when we review our options. First, we have to see what the president actually says.
So in other words, they're going to fight this tooth and nail. And when there's a Democrat president, just know that we're coming after the guns. That's the message she's sending. If this is ruled to be constitutional. And now, I mean, then you've got a tremendous mess. I was talking to Mike this morning. I don't know how many of you heard what I said, but I honestly believe the president should not sign the bill and then immediately go to the American people. If he needs to hold rallies, let him hold rallies. Let him go on, have a nighttime address to the American people, lay out the case. I know he's already done that and talking about border security, but he needs to do it again. He needs to get the attention of the American people. He needs to do whatever it takes to convince a majority of Americans that this border wall is necessary for national security, and then put the pressure on the Democrats. Just keep pounding at them. But
can you do that when it's going to go to a shutdown?
That's what I'm saying.
He doesn't sign it.
That's what I'm saying. Shut it down. Don't sign it and then go on tour.
Yeah.
Out and say tell people the reason the government is shut down. Take this bill and read it. I mean, do you think a majority of Americans would approve if they knew that people who were coming into this country, I mean, you're gonna get, more illegal. You're gonna get a double of the H-2B visas. You were gonna get the people who are sponsoring unaccompanied minors, which is the way that MS-13 people get into this country. It's gonna make it easier for them to stay because they're not gonna be able to be deported. Do you think a majority of Americans, when they hear that the way this bill was structured, that it's designed so that the counties, knowing that the counties that would have to give permission for this fencing to go up, this wall to go up, are left-leaning and prone to take bribes from the Mexican cartel? I mean, it's all right there in the document. It's just that nobody's going to read it because everybody's working, everybody's paying attention to other things, and the people that we've elected to go protect us against this kind of thing are not doing their jobs. I just think the President of the United States could go and convince people that the Democrats are responsible for the shutdown and put the pressure on them. The national emergency is, normally I would say, okay, if we can't get this any other way, but, I mean, it is fraught with peril. First of all, we have no idea how the courts will rule. And in the second place, if they do support the president again, you don't want to live in a world where a progressive president has unfettered executive power to declare a national emergency and do pretty much whatever the heck he wants to do.
Can the American people beat the clock against the Democrats who say, all right, let them come at us. Eventually, this shutdown is going to hit the airports, and that's it. They'll say, whatever you got to do to open it up.
Give me the solution.
I don't know. I'm telling you right now, I have no idea.
This is a terrible solution.
I agree.
I mean, you don't sign a bill that doesn't accomplish look what we've done. Look how far we've come. We've already endured one partial government shutdown.
Yep.
And now we're going to get real negotiation. This is not real negotiation. This is nonsense.
No, it's the Democrats getting everything they want. And they've hidden it in this huge bill.
Right.
So it looks like all they're talking about is we're giving you over $1 billion to build some kind of barrier.
Yeah. And it's not.
And they don't even talk about anything else in this bill.
It's not going to happen. Now, that's why, when something is not right and it's a farce, you don't go along with it. I mean, I know I don't want to shut the government down. I don't want to see that happen to 25% of the government. But I would rather go on the offensive and be in the right and expose what this stuff is to the American people and at least give that a shot before I go in and sign some kind of national emergency order. That I don't think that's going to work either. I think the bottom line is the president is doing this to be able to say, I've done everything I could possibly do. And I don't know if that's going to fly.
Could Congress override it with all the votes they got?
You're talking about a national emergency?
Well, if he doesn't sign the bill, could Congress go back and say, we'll just override you? Because look at all the – we had 300 votes
But the Republicans would have to go en masse to override the president. They're not going to do it. Mm-hmm. They won't – I don't think that. I don't think those people have the guts to go up against Donald Trump because, again, his popularity and a lot of what's driving this is that his popularity, his polling numbers are going up. And he doesn't want, I don't think, to do anything to stop that.
Well, the shutdown can change all of that.
So
now they're weighing it.
They're not weighing anything, Gary. It's already been decided. This has been decided. The president's going to sign this bill, and he's going to declare a national emergency. And then we'll see what the courts say, and we'll see what the Democrats do the next time they have an opportunity. And we'll see what the Democrats do to push back against the national emergency declaration. Not just going to take that laying down. 1-888-660-WLFJ, 888-660-9535. When we come back, we're going to talk about the fact that Andrew McCabe went on national television and confessed to trying to stage a coup to oust the president of the United States. I'll explain that to you in just a minute. Stay with us.
And here's your host, Dr. Tony Bean.
All right, welcome back. Going to be a big night at the Bon Secours Arena tonight because we got Toby Mac coming to town, his Hits Deep tour. 2017, I was trying to find out who all is coming with him because I think it's like a ton of people. I think Jeremy Camp is going to be there. Let's see, who else? Mandisa? No.
I like all of those so far.
Oh, no, never mind. Never mind.
What are you doing?
I'm looking up. I just put in tour. And all I'm getting these from 2016. And then, of course, you can't do anything but get tickets when you're – all right. Anyway, it's tonight. It's going to be at 7 o'clock at the Bon Secours Arena, and we're going to – my oldest daughter and I are going. We're going to go out and have some dinner. I'm trying to convince my younger daughter to go, but I don't know if I'm going to be able to do that. All right, Barbara's on the phone. Go ahead, Barbara.
Good morning.
Hey.
Tony, and you're right, this is a mess, but here's what I'd like to see president do.
Okay.
Go to the Rose Garden, just like he's going to sign it, put the pen down and say, this bill is a travesty against the American people, and the emergency that I am declaring is that the government is being shut down for a travesty, and we will not shut the government down unless the Democrats vote to do so. And let it go. Get up and walk away. Don't sign the bill. Start doing what you said, going out on tour and pointing out this garbage.
Well, the key. The key is him communicating to the American and sending out everybody else that they've got. So anyway, thanks, Barbara. I appreciate it. Joel's next. Joel, go ahead.
Hi, Tony. Good to talk to you again.
Thank you, sir.
This reminds me so much of a past election. If President Trump signs this bill, he just as well save his time and not even bother campaigning. Do you remember another president? Read my lips. No new taxes, and they buried him with it. That's exactly what's going to happen to President Trump if he signs this bill.
Well, I'm concerned about that, too. I mean, I'm afraid this is going to hurt him if he signs the bill with the base. He's going to declare a national emergency to try to take the sting out of it. But I think a lot of people are concerned about that. They're afraid that it won't be constitutional, and they're afraid also that a Democrat president would do a lot of bad things with a precedent like that in his pocket if he comes to the office. So,
even the Republicans in Congress who signed onto this and voted to approve it, they're going to have a very tough reelection campaign themselves.
Yeah, I think so.
I just see it as a horrible deal all the way around. They should never, ever have even signed on to it. I'm not even sure why the Republicans were in on the conference, to be honest with you.
Yeah. Well, it doesn't seem to me that they were able to get any. I mean, the things that they got have been so watered down, and the poison pill has been put in there with these local counties to work with them. I mean, there's no way, unless enough pressure can be brought to bear. And these are liberal counties. I think the pressure would be going the other way against the officials in those counties. Joel, thanks for the call.
Wayne,
you're next.
Yes, I love what Barbara just said. The Democrats, the definition of the word compromise for the Democrats was defined by Ronald Reagan, and that is cave in to all our demands. We might throw you a little crumb, but cave in. And if President Trump signs this, that's what he's done, gotten a little tiny crumb and caved in. And if Ruth Bader Ginsburg is replaced on the Supreme Court, then there would be little reason to vote for President Trump again. And I'd like to know how local senators and congressmen have voted for it. I called Jeff Duncan's office Wednesday and asked him to vote against it.
Yeah. Well, I don't know. I'll see if I can pull up a list here. But there were over 300 votes in favor.
I heard that last night.
Republicans. Yeah. But, I mean, not by Republicans, but 300 votes.
Right, total.
Total. Yeah, it was overwhelmingly passed. All right, Wayne, thanks. I wanted to shift gears here for just a second because I wanted to talk about this interview with McCabe. It really is. Andrew McCabe has been disgraced as an FBI. I mean, he was the acting head of the FBI. He was fired. He's under investigation. He's lied to multiple agencies, and he's still in a lot of hot water legally. And yet he goes on to with a 60 Minutes interviewer and pretty much says that, yeah, we were going to use the 25th Amendment of the United States in order to try to remove the president. And they're talking about 8 days in May from the time that the president made the decision to fire James Comey to the time that Robert Mueller began his investigation. During that time period, Andrew McCabe was, and others in the FBI were trying to work behind the scenes, having meetings and conversations, according to McCabe. Now, that may not even be true, to try to use the 25th Amendment. Now, first of all, let me read the 25th Amendment to you. Section 4 is what's pertinent. Whenever the vice president and a majority of either the principal officers of the executive departments or of such other body as Congress may by law provide, transmit to the president pro tem of the Senate and the Speaker of the House of Representatives their written declaration that the president is unable to discharge the powers and duties of his office, the vice president shall immediately assume the powers and duties of the office as acting president. Now, where does it say in there that the FBI has the ability to do this? This is not the way this is supposed to work. This is supposed to be a cabinet member that goes to other cabinet members and the vice president, and they get everybody to agree, or at least a majority to agree, that the president is unfit, and then they make a move. Now, thereafter, when the president transmits to the president pro tem of the Senate and the Speaker of the House of Representatives his written declaration that no inability exists, he shall resume the powers and duties of his office unless the vice president and a majority of the principal officers of the executive department or of such other body as Congress may by law provide transmit within 4 days to the president pro tem of the Senate and Speaker of the House of Representatives their written declaration that the president is unable to discharge the powers and duties of his office. Thereupon, Congress shall decide the issue, assembling within 48 hours for that purpose if not in session. If the Congress, within 21 days after receipt of the letter, of the latter written declaration, or if Congress is not in session within 21 days after Congress is required to assemble, determines by a two-thirds vote of both houses that the President is unable to discharge the powers and duties of his office, the Vice President shall continue to discharge the same as acting President. Otherwise, the President shall resume the powers and duties of his office. So, to put this in a nutshell, I want you to hear the whole thing. It takes members of the executive branch. It takes cabinet members working in concert with the vice president to go and say the president is not able to discharge his duties. And then the president can say, oh, yes, I am able to discharge my duties. And then they have to come back and say, well, no, actually, you're not. And we're going to have Congress settle this. And the Congress, it has to be a two-thirds vote in the House and the Senate, just as if the president is being impeached. Andrew McCabe cannot just decide within the bowels of the FBI and go down and start holding meetings and talk about, secret recordings and do any of that without, honestly, I mean, I don't see how this is not a coup. I don't see how you don't accuse Andrew McCabe of trying to overturn the election of the United States. I mean, the people of this country get to decide who the president is. And just because Andrew McCabe doesn't agree with the president's decision to fire James Comey, and just because Andrew McCabe has bought into this phony Russian collusion story, it doesn't give him the right to begin proceedings against the president without the support of the cabinet members. And For him to go on television and admit that to me is absolutely stunning. All right, that's all the time we have for the first hour, but the good news is we still got another live hour to go.